Support the Amigos podcast on Patreon or PayPal and receive cool perks and rad swag. Visit our page at everythingamiga.com/support.
Amiga, the first personal computer that gives you a creative edge.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Amigos. I'm John.
And I'm Aaron.
And today, Aaron, my mind's telling me no, but my body is telling me yeah.
My ears are telling me, good God, no.
Aaron, you know what that means, don't you?
Time to puke.
have we stepped outside your musical wheelhouse again, Aaron?
Man, you are well outside my musical universe.
Aaron, I don't see nothing wrong with a little bump and burn. We're talking about bump and burn today, Aaron.
Is that your Barry White voice?
That's my R. Kelly voice.
Oh, yeah. Man. I wouldn't use that voice.
You probably don't want to use that voice, especially not when you're involved in the world of public education.
No, you don't want to use that one, man. Yeah.
So, Aaron, bump and burn. This is a kart racing game. Now, I want to hear about your real life exploits in kart racing, because I know that you've probably been out on a go-kart track once or twice before, haven't you?
Back in the day, I used to competitively race go-karts. Well, they weren't go-karts. They were sort of like motorized wheelchairs. And we used to go around the track down at the old Rock Lake Pool. As you know, they had a large black top track that surrounded the entire pool area.
Right.
Complete with ramps. There would be water hazards, spike pits. Oh, wait, no. I didn't do any of that stuff. Do you think I'm going to fit in a kart boat? Are you kidding me? No, I've never done any kart racing, you goof.
Well, you know, they did have... So you never went in the go-karts over at Rock Lake?
No. Are you kidding me?
I don't know, you know. I always enjoyed going around the go-karts and having fun. What about at Disney World when they have like the old Model Ts that were on the, you know, you could sort of quote unquote drive them around? Did you ever do that when you were down at Disney World?
I've done that at King's Island.
Okay.
I was only at Disney once, and it was like raining most of the time I was there. I was unimpressed by Disney World, and I was with Hose who was sick. So that wasn't a great trip. But the old-timey cars is a staple of amusement parks. And so I would ride those, but I wouldn't classify those in the same racing structure as bump and burn. Those are set and be bored is what those are called.
Yeah, you're not really going to, it doesn't really raise the old adrenaline racing those cars around the track. Well, I'll tell you something.
You can't race them. They're on a rail and they don't go side by side. So you can't race those, no.
I guess I'm using race in a very loose manner.
Yeah, in the wrong manner.
Well, Aaron, we should probably move on past this exciting talk about our non-history in real life go-kart racing. Now, you never wanted to actually be a race car driver, though, right? Did you ever go through a phase where you wanted to do that?
If I was going to race car, now keep in mind, I've been a big kid my whole life. In fact, I'm still a big kid, to be frank with you. But and so I was not really into racing, but the old man was an old drag racer, and so mm-hmm. I did used to watch some funny cars.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't really fit in a funny car. So I would say if I was going to get into some sort of racing, it would have been demolition derby stuff, which I was very close to getting in a couple of demolition derbies. Things just didn't go the right way for me, so I didn't get to do it. But that
now
was
for people
sort of
for people that are overseas that might not be familiar with the vernacular of the auto racing scene around these parts, what is a funny car?
Funny car. Well, the best way to describe them is if you take a rocket engine and strap it to the lightest thing you can and put wheels on it, pretend it's the front end of a car. That's that's basically what it is. It's that bit where you get in the car, just like Dragster.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Christmas tree in front of you with the lights. It comes down to green. You hit the gas. You go straight in a straight line as fast as you can. And then you get to the end of the line and there's a finish line. And then you hope you can stop with your little parachute. That's funny car racing. So when I was a kid, that was an interesting thing to watch. you know, racing changed a lot. Even like stuff like the Daytona and stuff, it was way, way more ungoverned when I was younger. So like you'd see all kinds of crazy stuff, but it was sort of kind of dangerous as well in a different way. And I guess that's, I mean, they sort of had to put the clamps down on it. But funny car, I mean, I remember one time watching a race. I'm trying to think of what it was. But anyway, they had a fire in the pits. And they said that the fire, because I saw this guy freaking out and dancing around. I was like, what's that guy doing? He was on fire. But because of the fuel or whatever, you couldn't see the flames.
Oh, my gosh. Right? How scary.
I never heard of this. Yeah, it was. And yeah. They doused this sucker. I guess he was okay. But I never forgot that, you know, and that was a long time ago. So, there was a different mystique. It was super duper redneck back in the day.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Mega redneck. Not like now where just rednecks go to see it. I mean, it was like as country as it gets. Mm-hmm. Some of the drivers had actually, you know, been chased by revenueers in real life. So, I mean, they came straight from the back roads.
Yeah.
You know, now, so.
Have you ever been to a live race before?
Not a live, like a not a, a round track race. No, I've okay. never been.
I haven't either. Yet. I haven't either. I've heard too they're incredibly boring. Loud. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I hear they're great if you're liquored up.
Yeah, so, like most things in life.
Yeah. There you go.
Aaron, let's kick on over to what's been going on this week in our little world of important news. Let's look at what's been going on over at everythingamiga.com this week.
Very good. Well, you know, we have a piece this week submitted by a fellow who's currently in the chat, Rob. Professional author Rob Flack-O'Hara.
Yes.
He's all man at a yard wide. What do we got here, Boatster?
This is his write-up of the game ARG. Now, this is one I don't believe that we've covered ARG before on this show. Have we?
The name for me sounds familiar, but I don't remember if we played. I don't think me and you played this one, no.
This is one of these games that Arcadia Systems did. Remember, we talked about this long, long ago on the Amigos about how there was a company that made these arcade boards based off of, you know, Amiga 500 motherboards with a custom version of Kickstart. And ARG is one of these games, and this is Flack's review of this game. You know, it's funny because this just seems like a game that we should have covered a million times because we both like Rampage. You like Primal Rage a whole bunch. This is like a game of total wanton destruction. It appears that this is a picture-perfect port of the arcade game with the exception of the fact that they've removed the two-player feature, which seems like a startling oversight. Rob once again is at his witty best talking about all of the foodstuffs hidden in the different forts and pyramids and things throughout history. I really enjoyed reading this article. If you are into discovering what might be the most arcade perfect port ever of an Amiga game, because this literally came right off the board, make sure you check this out over at everythingamiga.com. That Blitters is the name of it.
I didn't even know this had been an arcade game. I've never heard of this game. I mean, I'd heard the name, but I didn't think it was an arcade game.
I can't imagine that these got widely released in arcades. I mean, I'm just taking a shot in the dark, but I've never heard of any of these Arcadia Systems games. I've never seen any out in the wild.
It looks pretty good, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Put it on the list, Boat. Never-ending list, man.
Why don't we head on over to our YouTube channel and see what else is going on this week, Aaron?
All right, man. So, we had, you know, I guess we don't think we really talked about this, but we had sort of a wacky release schedule last week. If you showed up last Friday looking for us, we weren't here. We moved for one week only. We moved recording to Sunday and mostly to accommodate my brain freeze. But we released in a sort of a weird sequence. And so this week, our ARG got released before last week's Amigos.
So, yeah, so why don't we talk about that?
So right out of the gate, we did, you know, I've got to tell you, we did one of these crazy Game Boy knockoffs called the Game Master. There's a couple goofs right there. And the Game Master, it was crap. I mean, I'll be honest with you, it was a chunky, clunky piece of crapiola. Right there it is. If you're watching at home, just not a good system. But we gave it the college try, Boat, and tried a couple games, and they weren't that good either. I mean, Brent's game was less crappy, but they were both crappy. So I'm going to call the Game Master crap. I don't recommend, but I do recommend you check us out. It was good. You know, when we find something crappy, we do mock it and have a good time. So it's always worth a look. So if you feel like it, I'll pop over and have a look at that ARG. This week, I will say we will be checking out the MSX 2 boat. So that's
surely going to be a much better show this week. I'm really looking forward to that. Two. Yeah.
I mean, I guess we could sort of talk about this for a second. Boat's out of his mind and decided to put this.
So Aaron last week did a special Patreon song in honor of Halloween. And of course, he performed it live at the Coal Miners Lounge in Culloden, West Virginia.
I took my whole game room out, computer room with me. That's right.
And so we have a couple cameos from some different people. RMC is in there. If you enjoy good singing,
yeah, I got a kick out of that.
Then make sure you check out the mystery Patreon song from 11/1/2020.
That was a one time only event, I assure you. excuse me. Let's look at this bad. This came out of nowhere. I love these. You know, this is good stuff here from our old buddy. This was a brutal presentation here, and this is Jason Warren's top 10 most played video Amiga video games of all times.
Yes.
Brutal Barracuda's got the jack. You know what I'm saying? And he puts together one darn fine video, and he's got the format boat. It's sleek. It's sexy. It's the Brutal Barracuda way.
Yeah.
And he looks at our buddy Jason's top 10. This is good stuff. Jason, tech-minded fellow. If you're interested to see what a guy like him digs on the Amiga, I suggest check this out, or just check it out to look at some cool footage. Good stuff. I was very pleased to see Brutal pop out a new one here. And then let's talk about our good buddy, the Flack, Jack Flack. I love it when they do that. The old Sprite Castle. This time out, Boatster, he's taking a look at Pitfall. Now, I love Pitfall, mm-hmm. as you know. I've never played the C64 version. This of you?
No, this is, but it does look very similar to the Atari 8-bit version, I will say.
Does it? Because, yeah. You know, it's funny. I'm not sure I've ever played that. Now, I did play Pitfall 2 on the 8-bits, as you'll recall, because mm-hmm. I got hosed big time when I beat it and found out there was a whole other, I had to play the one version that had a whole other series of levels. That was the most, I never went back. That was the end of me playing Pitfall. I was like, I'm done. But anyway, check out Flack as he plays some Pitfall. This should be good stuff here. He's always got the goods. So, and of course, Sprite Castle, always great. Boat, what did you guys have going on over on This Week in Retro?
This Week in Retro, we had a pretty good show this week, Aaron. We talked about a new game for the C64 called Wild Wood, which is sort of loosely based on the Kenneth Graham novel, Wind in the Willows. We talked about, this is something that's near and dear to your heart, Aaron. Virtual pinball table coming from Arcade 1-Up. You knew this day would come. When the minds of Arcade 1-Up, when they put together their cheapery with their licensing prowess, and they're actually going to release a pinball table. Have you heard about this, Aaron?
I have heard about this. Some of the guys I follow on YouTube got the early scoop on this thing. And I will say it does, you know, I'm in the market for something like this, to be honest with you. When I built that virtual table a few years ago, it was just a little bit too unusably large, as mm-hmm. you know. But I enjoyed it immensely, you know.
Yeah.
And so I would like to have something like that. So, I'm pleased with it. It looks good. It looks a much better quality than the last home virtual release we saw.
So we talked about that. And, of course, the big story of this week is the Raspberry Pi 400. Now, Aaron, I know you've got very strong opinions about the old 400. This is a new release from Raspberry Pi that is a keyboard and a Raspberry Pi all in one, in that familiar wedge shape design, not unlike the 48K ZX Spectrum or the Amiga 500. It's an all-in-one machine. They're pricing it. You know, these pies tend to inch up in price the further we get out on the tarmac here. When the Pi first came out, it was $35. But then again, you know, it was just a bare board. There was no case. There was no power supply. If you want a Raspberry Pi 400, the mouse, the whole package, the whole kit and caboodle is going to run you about $100. Aaron, do you think that this is a good product? Is this something that you're interested in, or do you think that this is just useless crap?
I don't think it's useless crap. I will say that. Here's the way you can. There's two ways you can judge a product, right? Will it sell? Okay. Answer, yes. They'll sell these lickety split. And there are plenty of good uses for them. Is it something I'm going to pick up? No. And the main reason is, of course, as you know, I've got Pi gimmicks at the yin yang back here that I don't really use that much. We talked about this in Discord quite a bit. And the truth of the matter is, I'm not real comfortable using Linux. So there's that. And I don't know what I would do with it. And at the end of the day, I went around and around with LaRon, I think, in Discord. When you're in for $100, I mean, you could easily go out and buy a proper laptop for that much money, and you could put Linux or Windows or whatever you wanted on it. You know, I've got an i5 laptop set behind me. I paid $12, you know, and I bought three or four of them at the time. It's not that hard to get them cheap, and so why would I pay lots more money for something? I mean, it's one thing if you're paying for the Pi because it's so small, but this is a big old thing. You know, it's the size of a keyboard. You know, there was a couple other things I didn't like, but I mean, I think it still gets a pretty decent product.
Well, I think you have to look at it from the fact, are you going to be using this to do some neat hardware like chicanery? Because, you know, the big thing about the Pi is that it's got all those GIPO ports or whatever that allow you to hook up
different,
you know, gauges and sensors and robotics and stuff like that. You're going to have a lot harder time doing that with a traditional laptop. I think that this has a place in education. I think it has a place in people's tinkering. But if you're looking to get just a daily driver machine, for $100, you can do a lot more than this thing. So I can see both sides, really.
Yeah, the GPIO, I mean, you're dead on. I'm not saying there's no use for it, but I think the uses are, like I mentioned this, and I was talking to Flack on Discord. If these had been around before I spent all the money and spent all the time to put a Pi in a Commodore 64 or a Cocoa, probably just would have bought one of these. It would have been a lot cheaper, and it would have done the same thing. So, you know, it's a mixed bag. But, I mean, for a lot of people, you know, they'll sell a ton, that's for sure.
Yeah, and the last core story that I wanted to get your thoughts on, since you are so intimately connected with both the world of classic arcade games, professional wrestling, and hot sauce, Aaron, Billy Mitchell is taking Twin Galaxies to court over his Donkey Kong high score removal. Your thoughts, please. Yeah.
You know, I like Billy Mitchell as a player. I know everyone thinks he's a piece of garbage. He probably tried to pull something. But one thing about Billy is, first of all, if he tried to pull something, and the experts agree that he did, he probably should not have his scores placed on Twin Galaxies because he violated the ethical principles that are associated with... So basically, if you let someone in that cheats, it sort of makes everyone look like they could be cheating, right?
Right.
That's what that means. Now, if Billy were to set a Donkey Kong record in public with a camera and a team of people from Twin Galaxies there and submit that, I would have no trouble with that, you know? So that's the way I feel. Because one thing about Billy, he'll do his stuff in public with a crowd, all right? Yeah. And he plays a ton of different games. He is the premier classic video game player of all time.
No question.
People don't like that, but it's true. It's a shame that they went to court. Twin Galaxies is owned by different people now. Walter Day is not involved in its ownership now. I think it's changed hands twice. And so we'll see what happens. I mean, I don't know. I think Billy's trying to clear his good name, but I don't see that happening.
No.
You know, I think he's pretty much boned on that. So if I was him... Here's, you know, it's the old damage control. What do you do? Well, I would either say, listen, yes, I did this. Or if he didn't do it or just doesn't want to admit it, he could say, listen, I will prove myself with my deeds and my acts and not my words. And then he'll just go out and just go to work. Mm-hmm. Because if he's going out there and killing it on Donkey Kong or Pac-Man or whatever, in public, if you will, as the American Dream would say, then no one can deny that his greatness. Plus, it'll clear the fact that he's a good player.
That's all he has to do. So we'll keep an eye on that. That case isn't going to court until at least 2021. So we got plenty of time to ponder it, Aaron. Let's head on over to the track, not the racetrack, the train track, Aaron. Let's get the gamble train going. Let's talk about this week's Amiga News. Amiga News. All right, Aaron. Train. Our first and only story this week is comes to us from someone near and dear to our hearts, our old friend Neil Mansell. We got an email from Neil a couple weeks ago saying that he is relaunching Kickstart 2. This is a magazine that he compiles all by himself. And this magazine has kind of a neat angle. I don't know, Aaron, I'm sure you remember the halcyon days of Kickstart back when we used to host it over on everythingamiga.com.
It was actually named after us for a little while.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it sort of became Kickstart to that. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah. And so what Neil does is he actually takes news articles from various sources and reformats them into a specific year and month. So let's see. I'm going to open this up here. So basically, I think that this one is from 1992 or something like that. And so what he does is he goes through and he finds all these different ads, all these different articles, and he puts them into a brand new magazine. So it's like the best of 1992 magazines in one magazine, and it's all about the Amiga. Other things that were going on. There's charts, music charts and stuff like that. It's really cool. Have you had a chance to look at this one here?
Yeah, I have not. He did send me a real nice email about it. And I was like, oh, yeah, we'll definitely mention that. Neil was around. Neil's a real nice guy, as you said, I mentioned, and real talented guy. And this guy also has his search skills are impressive. I like the way he puts it together. This looks slick. I'm so glad he's back around, to be honest with you. And I hope he does well. I really do. I think it's a lot of fun. I haven't got a chance to look at this one yet. In fact, I didn't know it was actually out, but it's definitely, it'll be as soon as the show's over, I'll be popping in, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah. All right. Well, Aaron,
I think we've got a little bit more news. I'm going to do this at the beginning of the show instead of the end for once, but
okay, go ahead, man.
There's a couple things I want to pitch here. Number one, the time is drawing nigh on ARG for our Thanks for Giving marathon boat.
Yes, yes.
And which boat was involved last year. I don't know what we're going to do this year with the stupid COVID. We will be at 9 a.m. on November 27th, which is a Friday morning. Me and the Brent will be going live for 8 to 10 hours of game streaming. If you are interested in having a pie piece submitted, everything will get played. So if you want to submit anything, drop us a note over at argpresents@mail.com, and we will take your suggestion and make you a pie piece up. We'll be spinning randomly Brent will determine every half hour or so. We'll be picking games based on what we spin. So it's going to be like about 100 ARG episodes mixed into an 8-hour period. But we had a good time last year, so that should be a lot of fun. Again, that's this month. So, and this will be probably the last week we'll take some suggestions. So, again, that's Friday, the 27th of November. One last item, Boat, that I wanted to touch on early in the show this time was International Computer Club, Boat.
Mm.
Its time is drawing nigh as well. This thing was going to take place on December 12th, Boat, at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The deal goes down. Boatster, we will have the second meeting of the International Computer Club. If you are a Discord member and would like to sign up for a demonstration or to show a video or to give a speech or to have a talk or whatever you want to do, the sign up sheet is in the International Computer Club section of the Discord. Please sign up. We are open for business, Boat, on that. Everyone is more than welcome to come and watch. It will be on Zoom, just like it was last time. And the last one went pretty good, Boat. So
it was a great time.
I
loved it.
Well, fingers crossed, man. Let's just put it that way. But I'm hoping that it goes well. And we've got some people that have already signed up. So if you're interested in doing something for International Computer Club, hop over to Discord and sign up today. Because we'll probably shut that down in a couple weeks.
We probably shouldn't go any further. There's one more announcement, Aaron. You plan on doing an extra stream tonight if you're watching us live, don't you?
I am going to try to stream tonight, net willing. I don't really know what I'm going to do, to be honest with you. So I might
Those are the best
fire
ones.
Up coin ops. I might fire up coin ops and just take requests across all platforms.
Oh, I'd love that.
I might try that. So I will say, Intellivision's on the docket at some point in the near future. but I don't have the Intellivision in here tonight right now, so I'll probably just go crazy and do some just crazy random stuff.
Cool.
So there you go, Boaster. That's all we got, I think, my friend.
All righty. Well, it's time to talk about Bump and Burn.
Bam. It's on, son. Let's talk about the old Bump and Burn, Bo. Now, you know, I always ask you this, and so I'm going to ask you again. Had you played this one?
Yeah, this is one that I had played. You know, I'd heard that there was a Mario Kart clone on the Amiga, I had played this one before. In fact, I want to say that it was part of an Amigos play stream that I'd done sometime in the past.
Oh, really? Okay. This is one I'd heard about. I don't think I remember ever trying it, and if I did, I didn't try it very long. So right out of the gate, I want to just discuss something about Bump and Burn. This is the first time I think I've ever seen this. And so it's going to change the way I go over this a little bit. Bump and Burn was released on the CD32 and had an ECS-OCS release on disc. And what struck me as odd was that this was developed by two different outfits, which I thought was kind of weird, mm-hmm. Bode.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like the same game for the most part, so I don't have an explanation. I looked around, and maybe someone could come up with something. It was strange to me. So mostly I played the CD32 version, but I did actually play the other one as well. So we'll go over it as well. So Bump and Burn was released in 94, of course, on one CD, if you've got the CD32, or six discs, if you have ECS. This game had was published by Grand Slam, and the CD32 version was developed by The Dome, Boatster. The Dome actually did stuff that we've played. It's funny because I couldn't remember them. They did Bob's Bad Day, Last Action Hero, PGA European Tour, all right? Pugsy, and Shaq Fu, Bo.
Really?
Remember Shaq Fu? Yeah. So we've looked at European Tour and Shaq Fu. I know we've looked at those. And I believe we loved, didn't we like European Tour? And
this is really like a grade A developer then.
Well, I mean, hey, listen, if they've released two things that we sort of liked, there you go.
Yeah.
The CD32 version, this had tons and tons of music in it. As mm-hmm. I go over the people that made it, I'll go over the musicians, but they actually, a couple of them did some stuff we liked too. So the guy that coded this for the CD32 was a guy named David Rouse. He also worked on European Tour. And a guy that did the graphics was named Rob Balderstone. He also worked on PGA European Tour. And you could tell this game has some pretty good graphical panache, if you will. The music on this thing, there were tons of tracks, weren't there, Boat, on the CD32 version?
I was very impressed by the amount of music. You know, I constantly dog the Amiga for not having music and sound effects at the same time. But this game, you know, of course, in the CD32 version, was amazing. I mean, it had everything that I could possibly want.
I thought the music was a mixed bag.
Really?
If I'm honest.
I thought it was okay.
It did have music. Mm-hmm. So there's that. Amongst the musicians on here, and I couldn't determine who did what tracks, okay? But Andy Sower, believe it or not, amongst the things he's done, and this wasn't listed, so I had to read it from him directly, but he worked on the Amiga version of Bloodnet, which we just looked at.
Uh-huh.
And he also did a game called Ruffian. Another musician that worked on this, David R. Punchin, worked on Flight of the Amazon Queen.
Oh,
so
okay.
There's another couple games that we
I thought the music was strong in this game.
It's like I said, I thought some of the tracks were okay. Now, this is an interesting bit before we get deep into the actual game itself. I looked at the manual for this, and I got tipped off on Hall of Light. The manual mentions an Amiga 1200 version of this.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard drive installable. Guess what? It never got released.
Oh.
A lot of reviews mentioned it, too. So this is an odd game where there's an Amiga CD32 release and an Amiga OCS ECS version, but no Amiga 1200 version.
I wonder if it was just because it was so late getting out of the gate. You know, 94, by the time this came out, maybe the writing was on the wall for Amiga as a company and they just didn't do it.
Yeah, and this is David Rouse, the guy that worked on this, confirmed that it was planned, but never mm-hmm. released. So kind of wacky there. And who knows why, you know. And this also got released in a collection, so which it would have been another chance to have released the AGA, you know, disc version, but they didn't do it. So kind of weird on that front. So what is this wacky game? Well, Boat sort of nailed it right out of the gate, didn't you? It's a Mario clone. In fact, some of the magazines I looked at, when I looked at the reviews, and I think this was a little idiotic, but they were like, yeah, it's exactly like Mario. They just swap the characters. It's like,
well, it's clear that in so many cases, people wrote these things without actually having ever played any of the games. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. Because, I mean, I don't think anyone's going to see this and be like, oh, yeah, it's exactly the same. It's like, yeah. No, it's not. So this game has a nice tune starting up. It looks pretty good. It's got, but I mean, it's bare bones on those menus, isn't it? But right out of the gate, you can see this game is one of these games where like it looks like they started to make it awesome, but then just made it. The menus aren't much, you know. They don't get you that fired up to play it. And there aren't that many options either. What did you think about this game? Just the presentation, the opening, the whole nine yards. I'm assuming you sat through it at least once.
Oh yeah, I thought that the opening presentation was fine. It's hard to really knock it against Super Mario Kart, at least in the opening presentation. It allows you to pick your tracks, allows you to pick your drivers. Yeah. You got, you know, your options there. It wasn't too bad. Now, one thing that I did notice, and this is kind of getting a little ahead of myself, is that I played all of the different racers. And as far as I could tell, they did not exhibit any different traits at all. You know, the genius of the Mario Kart games is that all of the racers have different traits. Some are fast, some are slower, some corner better than others, some don't. In this game, the only thing I could tell the difference in between the two race or between the different racers was the style of the projectile that they threw. So like the dinosaurs would throw bones, the lady would throw lipstick or it was kisses that would the end. So that was disappointing right off the bat.
I've read that people, and I couldn't tell this either, but I've read that, you know, when you go to their home track, you would have some sort of advantage, but I didn't see any, I couldn't feel any advantage.
No, I certainly couldn't feel it, you know, taking turns, the acceleration, everything just felt exactly the same to me.
Yeah. So when you, let's just start straight from the beginning. You boot this thing up on your CD32 and you get your menu here. Now the menu gives you a very, very few options. You've got the option to play with a gamepad or joystick, and the difference there is strictly the way the buttons work. And on the OCS-ECS version of this, when you pick up a power-up or whatever, you basically pull back on you hit the fire button to go forward, okay? Mm-hmm. So it's one of those. And then you basically, when you get an item, you sort of pull back to confirm it and then forward to fire with
which
your
is dumb.
Joystick.
It's stupid.
It is. Well, I mean, it takes some getting. I'll tell you what, the first couple of races, I had to look in the manual. I'm like, what am I doing? Or you can use the secondary buttons on the CD32 to fire the thing. I didn't really, to be honest with you, I didn't think both were, either one of them were great. Mm-hmm. You know, it didn't, to me, the weapon fires didn't feel responsive, but it does give you the option of picking one or the other. It also gives you the option of one or two players, because this does have two-player simultaneous play. It also gives you the option of one player with the split screen, and the bottom part of the screen is the map. Did you ever play it like that?
I didn't play it like that, but I knew that was an option.
I don't know if it helps, but I mean, it cuts your screen in half. So that's there you go. As Boat mentioned, you get to pick your character. This is like someone put a kit together for wacky players. And they this is what they came up with. So let's go over some of these wacky guys. You've got the Beaver Bros, the Dodgy Dinos, Mr. Fabulous, whom I played him most of all. I will say I like his name. Loretta Lamour, Colonel Carnage, Eric Eskimo, and Frank Ann Steiner. Those are your characters in this. You've also got an ultra bad guy who's an unplayable guy. It's a big, huge guy. I didn't know this from the game, but the manual says that this is the you're in like a land called Tunia, I believe is what it's called, and this is the big championship race. And apparently, the different levels on this are the different areas in Tunia.
Okay,
all right?
Makes sense.
These are the and each of these corresponds to one of the players. So, like Boat said, you can pick from any of these tracks right out of the gate. You've got these names suck, but I'm just going to tell you what they're called. You've got the War-Torn City. That puts you in a good mood. Let's go play in the War-Torn City. That's Colonel Carnage's town. Then you've got the Race Track. That's Mr. Fabulous.
Oh, my gosh.
The Frozen Fjords. That's Eric the Eskimo. The Fallen Forest. That's the Beaver Bros. The Haunted Graveyards, Frank Infurter. Frank Infurter, listen to me. Frank Einstein. Candy World is Loretta Lamour's, and the volcano is the dodgy Dino.
And this is really where the game first falls apart, if you're at all familiar with like a Super Mario Kart. Because in Super Mario Kart, I think you just read five tracks. Is that right, Aaron?
I think there's seven tracks.
Seven tracks? Okay. I think there's 32 tracks in Super Mario Kart. So, you kind of have to approach a game like this. And, you know, how many people had already played Super Mario Kart and would subject themselves to buying this if they already owned Super Mario Kart? Probably a low percentage. So I'm not gonna murder this game for not living up to the standards set by Super Mario Kart, because this is made by people that do not have consoles. They've got to settle for the CD32.
All right. Well, you know, this game, it's funny, Boat, this game, because it has a lot going for it. I'm not the biggest fan of kart racers, okay? So there's that. So,
well, this is not a kart racer, so you should love this game.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah. I mean, yeah.
This is not a, you know, this game is the ultimate in false advertising. This is a straight up racing game.
Yeah, it's just happen to be.
A kart racer, you've got really, really small tracks. You know, you're modeling almost like an RC type track. Okay,
right.
And that's the genius of the kart racer, is that that's what makes it different than a normal racing game. In this game, you've got basically a Lotus 2 size track. You're just racing around it in an open canopied vehicle. That's
right.
All it is.
With weapons. Yeah. And so that, you're right. Anyway, think about it, Boat. One of these reviewers said this was Mario Kart with the sprites changed out. I mean, it's a completely different game. Another thing about it is, this is my biggest beef with this game. It's the viewpoint from behind. It is way too low.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it. It needs to be raised up so you've got a better view of what's coming. You can't tell what's coming. You can't tell what you're shooting. You can't tell squat.
Yeah.
All right. And it really kills this game for me, because they did a lot of stuff right. Here's the things that they did wrong. You're right. This track is too big. You can go forever without seeing anybody. In Mario Kart, you're always seeing suckers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether you fall behind or not. In this, you can go on for a long time. Also in this, if you make one mistake and get past, you can easily be hosed, because your weapons don't, it's not like Mario where you've got the magic this or the, I mean, the weapons are just don't do the job. I found the weapons lacking a lot in this game. They just didn't do it for me. Something else I didn't like in this was the fact that it had that AI that screws you. You know what I mean?
It's that rubber banding,
the,
you know, that they're
it's
always
the not fun AI.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I want the fun one, the good one. What were your thoughts of the camera angle behind the car? Did it bother you like it bothered me?
It didn't bother me quite as much as it did you. The biggest thing that bothered me was just the fact that the tracks just seemed like they went on forever and ever and ever and ever.
They did.
You know, I could never tell, you know, you know what place you're in. The radar in this game, I don't know what gave them the idea to do radar like that instead of just putting an outline of the course and showing you where the other racers were. I mean, you can do that in a very plain, abstract way and still make it useful. But in this game, what makes a racing game exciting? What makes a racing game exciting is knowing that either A, you're in first place, or B, you're not in first place, but you have a plan to get there. And when you're driving and you've gone 30 seconds and no one has passed you and you have not passed anyone, what are you doing? You're not having fun, that's for sure. And that's the situation I found myself in time after time on all these tracks.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, I could get past the, I mean, I don't like the viewpoint, but I can still play it. But it did get incredibly boring.
Mm-hmm.
Like, initially I played the graveyard scene because I thought, hey, graveyard, Halloween just passed. And frankly, I couldn't believe after I completed one lap and it kept going. I'm like, oh no. Then I finished a second lap and it kept going. I was like, oh God, no.
Yeah.
You know, and then by the time the third lap's over, you want to turn this sucker off.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Go ahead.
That's the thing is, like, you really want brevity, at least for me in a racing game, unless I'm playing something like Gran Turismo, something like a full on simulation. if you fall behind in a race, you know, and you know you're going to lose, well, you know, you can take comfort in the fact that maybe the race is almost over. But when the race just lingers on forever and ever, and it's not like this is a game where you can really, like, I know there's a store and you can upgrade things, but you can't really see, at least for me, when I would upgrade various parts of my vehicle, I wouldn't be able to see that right off the bat. I think that the whole store concept of this game was totally tacked on. They would have done better to just leave it out.
Well, I could tell a difference in grip and speed when I changed my engine and tires. I will say that. I could tell a definite difference. Here's the thing. The store would come after the race. First of all, this is going to sound stupid, but it happened more than once, so I'm going to call it a problem. I would be so irritated after the race, I'd be hitting the buttons to get past all the menus, and I'd forget about the store and hit the button, and it would just go past the store, and I would get pissed off. That happened to me a couple times.
Yeah, that happened to me
too. I should mention something else that pissed me off about this game, and keep in mind that we're playing this thing on jacked-up modern hardware. I played this on the Amiga, and I played the version that the company puts out, the EXE, so I can hear the tunes. And in both versions, was it just me or this thing take forever to load?
Yeah.
I thought to myself, my God, if we were playing this on CD or disc, we'd be here for a year waiting for this thing to load. I wasn't used to those load times on modern stuff.
I'm glad you brought that up because I almost forgot about that, but the load times were very annoying.
Okay, so it wasn't just me.
It wasn't just you.
Yeah. And I was like, because on the other Amiga, I thought, so I'm going to assume they had this stuff timed out for the CD on one version. I don't know what's going on with the disc version. But let's add all this up. Annoying long races, annoying store, long load times. Not good. And the thing is, it loads multiple times to get to the first race. It takes forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a recipe for disaster. I think this game could have, I mean, the funny thing is at the core of the game, it's not bad. Like graphically, it looks nice. The characters
are generic. Well, it depends on what you mean by the core of the game.
Okay, what do you think?
Okay, visually, there is nothing wrong with this game.
No, it looks okay.
It looks okay. Musically, there's nothing wrong with this game.
It's okay.
The track design, there's definitely something wrong with the game. Even the way that you take corners, like there are no real sharp turns in this game. You never have to decelerate. You can keep your foot on the gas the whole time.
I had to decelerate tons of times. I'll be honest.
I did not. I could take every single corner. Now, if I hit an oil slick or something like that, that's a different story. But all of these turns were just sort of graceful bends. And that's not what you want in a racing game. You've got to have some time where you take your foot off the gas.
I couldn't go around it the whole way with the gas down. I would run off the road. It could be the car or the tire grip or whatever. I don't know. Did you play all the racers you did, right?
Well, I didn't play all. I can't tell you that I played all the racers on all the tracks, but I played a bunch of the tracks with a bunch of the racers.
Did you have a favorite track or a track you hated the most?
I hated the one with the freaking dinosaur that lifted you all the
pterodactyl.
Yeah, that
was. And the thing is, there was that track was a mixed bag. It was very narrow. It was different than the other tracks. But the pterodactyl, first of all, it took forever for him to drop you.
Mm-hmm.
Once that guy picked you up, you're boned. But I did like the fact that they had jumps in that. But one of the problems I noticed is that if you died near a jump, it would spawn you right at over the hole and you would die again. You know, that kind of, and that's what that is just someone just dropped the ball.
Yeah.
You know, on that. It also had those interesting areas where you would drive over like the loose board swinging bridges. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of a neat effect. That board was a mixed bag. The boards, I will say, they put some thought into them. For example, the war-torn city, bombs and are going off all over the place. There's TNT everywhere, and occasionally a bomber will come over and drop bombs on the road. You know, that's kind of, and cause like craters to appear in the road. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, visually, this game does a lot of really neat stuff.
Yeah, the dinosaur level, like I said, they had some pretty cool stuff. I think probably the most generic level was Mr. Fabulous's level, the racetrack. It's the one that had the oil slicks, so it wasn't that spectacular, but it was okay. My problem, and also something else, speaking of the tracks, is they didn't give you the option to lower the amount of laps or anything. Something else that the Mario Kart series does is it gives you the different, like, I've played a ton of these, so you could stop me if the original one didn't have this, but as I recall, it has different, like, you could pick different racing leagues, different CCs of carts and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's some variety there. You can control the like whether you're playing against a whole, you know, the whole slate of racers or just another guy. You can control the speed of your cart, all that stuff. So yeah, Mario Kart has a lot more options. It's a more stripped down experience, but I think that these guys, I mean, obviously everybody was trying to capitalize on the kart racing craze. I mean, think about all the kart racing games that were released after Mario Kart. I think Mario Kart came out in 92. It wasn't long before you had Sonic and Crash Bandicoot. So you know the Amiga was going to end up with one of these games. And I really think that they could have done worse. It's just not a really great game.
You know, it always bugs me, though, Boat. It really bugs me. When you've got a game, listen, they laid the groundwork here for a decent game. All right, I think. They could have made a real good game. But why not put some options in there? That's the easiest part of everything. Mm-hmm. Change the amount of laps. If this was a one-lap race, that instantly would have made me like it more.
Mm-hmm.
I can tolerate one long, boring lap, but asking me to do three is too much. Plus, if you don't win and you've got to go back and do the whole thing again, that you want to jump off a cliff.
I agree with
you. I didn't like that. I mean, just let me pick a different track every time. If you don't win, either in the game or let me just pick another track. Don't make me do the same track again.
Mm-hmm.
The weapons in this, I guess we should probably go over a couple of weapons here, since they're nothing to write home about. You've got the ability to go invisible. Sometimes you'll get a power up to give you the ability to jump. You'll have the ability to run other guys off the road. There's a turbo, a smoke screen, invulnerability, mines, oil slick. You know, it didn't reinvent the wheel here, on that. But I didn't find the weapons to make a whole lot of difference, to be honest with you. And so I really
had a hard time with the weapons. I'd say that's probably one of my big problems with the game is that with the projectiles, I could fire those off, but I would get stuff like the landmines and stuff like that, and I would lay them down, but I was never actually sure what I was doing.
Yes.
And that's
right. Like in Mario Kart, if you got the banana or something, you could see your guy release the stuff. I couldn't see crap.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what was going on.
And again, that's part of it. You know, it's that extra 10% that you find in so many Nintendo games where they really thought about, like, whenever you drop a turtle shell in Mario Kart, you can sit there and hold the button and see it pop out behind your cart and then release it and release it with precision. And that's just something that a lot of developers don't think about, those little things.
Yeah, well, this, when I was playing this, your voice kept echoing in my head, and something you've said millions of times. It's like they played Mario Kart a few times and said, heck, we can do that. Let's give her a whirl. And then this was what they came up with. And this goes to show you, I mean, like you mentioned, the biggest detriment to this, even with the camera angle and the weapons, and it's just the fact that they made the tracks too big. And so you don't get any of that sort of kart style fun, you know, and that's the killer for this game. If you're looking for just a straight up a Lotus style racing game, you don't really care about the rest of it. You want some kind of kid, then you'll probably be okay with it.
Yeah. You know,
but if you want a kart racer, you're boned, because this really is barely, you can barely call it that.
Yeah. This is a solid racing game. This is a not very good kart racing game. That's what I would say.
I don't even think it's a solid racing game, to be honest with you, but that's just me. So I'm going to ask you, did you try the ECS-OCS version of this at all?
I played it briefly, and I didn't see much of a difference. I was just super eager to jump into the CD32 version that I didn't play it very long.
The difference, I can tell you that having played both, I played the ECS-OCS version for a good while. Different opening. CD32 version has all the guys on the screen at once in this big, shot. And of course, you've got more music. And it's funny, the opening of the ECS-OCS version, it's almost like they were like, they took the Zool approach and took like the cartoon sound effects and sampled the crap out of them and kind of put a drum beat in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was okay. Not great. But in terms of gameplay, I will say I did enjoy the CD32 version more. It played better to me. I can't say why. I tried both controller combinations, and I ended up, it didn't really matter, to be honest with you. I didn't think either one of them, the actual control of the car was okay, but the weapon, their weapon system, I don't like that either. I just didn't like the way they did that. Mario did, it was a much easier to use weapon system than they had in this, and you could have implemented the Mario style system with just the one button, it wouldn't have been that big a deal. But yeah, they did this other thing, so it is what it is. So I'll look these bad boys up, Boatster, to see how they ranked. First, the CD32 version, the Lemon folks gave this thing a 6.46, which, you know, Lemon, that's not the best score for a big budget game. No, that's a very low score. It's funny. We're going to go over these reviews here, but they're kind of funny. So Amiga CD32 Gamer, how do you think they felt about this boat?
I want to go out on a limb and think that they loved it. They couldn't get enough of it.
91%. They loved it. Amiga Computing gave it a 40. I really should have looked that one up. They really didn't like it. Amiga Format gave it a 70. Amiga Joker gave it a 60. CU Amiga gave it an 85. And the one gave it an 82. So that's the CD32 version. The ECS-OCS version scored pretty similarly, actually. The Lemon score on that was 6.2. So just a smidge lower. And you can tell these reviews, the reviews for this one came out a little earlier. And so Amiga Action gave this a 92. They really liked it. Amiga Format came back. Now, they'd reviewed this in 95, so this is the score they would have given it in 94. They gave it a 79. Amiga Joker, the same score, 60, which we see that for Amiga Joker. If they make a decision, they pretty much carry it across the platform. Amiga Magazine, 8 out of 10. Amiga Power gave this a 70. And the one gave it a 90 earlier. So definitely the bloom was off the rose on this thing from 94 to 95. And so when this, it's funny, these scores are always amuse me when it comes to that stuff, because as the days go on, they're unforgiving, and they'll kick it to the curb in a heartbeat once it gets up there in age. So any final thoughts on this one? But do we get any Discord action?
We did. We got quite a few Discord reviews from our community this week. Again, I feel like we don't say this enough. Thank you guys so much, all of our fine Discord community members, for posting these reviews, because we love hearing what you think. A lot of times you're more insightful than we are when it comes to this stuff. Kick things off with Jason Warnes. He just says, charming, 7 out of 10. Pixels of Dawn writes, somewhere between Mario Kart, Buggy Boy, and Lotus, this is a colorful racing game with character that can definitely pass some time and really has a sensation of speed at the fastest settings. Music is really quite bad on ECS, but much better on the CD32 version. Mm. But where this falls down is that the camera is quite low, making it hard to see upcoming hazards. And the volcano track is just irritating, with swooping enemies pulling you off the track and holes in the track. The game does suffer from poor loading times, too. Even running the WHD load version on my A600, they were still pretty bad. Fun, but too many problems. 6 out of 10. Yeah, you agreed with all of us, Pix. Frodo NL writes, bump and burn. Looks cute, but has too many issues. Especially the camera position is extremely irritating. I tried to like it, but rage quit at the end. Not something I normally do in games. 4 out of 10. David Z writes, the graphics are pretty good. Nice and vibrant colors. The controls seem very responsive. I did play on my A1200, so no music. Gameplay was enjoyable, and I was able to complete a few rounds. I do think the game would benefit from a turbo button or just a faster car. I felt that the other cars always overpowered me, and once I was behind, there was no chance to recover. All in all, a fun bumper-type game, but not enough speed for me. 5 out of 10. Paul, a.k.a. Hermsky, writes, firm, 6 out of 10. Never a fan of this format of racing, and this one is no different. Graphics are nice, very colorful and cartoony. Found it very slow and nauseating after a while, so didn't spend too long on the game. This is a great game for young children, and I'm sure would have kept many amused back in the day. Chris Folds writes, I tried various versions of this game. On OCS, it's a slow and jerky affair. A1200 smooths it up a little, and CD32 smooths it more and finally gives you music, as, hey, it's 1994. All versions suffer from the same bad driving angle, overspeeding of opponents with over-elastic AI, and the fact that they are trying to do Mario Kart with a Lotus-style engine just means it never gels. Going to give 3 scores. OCS, 4 out of 10. AGA, 6 out of 10. CD32, 7 out of 10. And finally, Z9K9 writes, I didn't play this a ton, but Chris Fold's comment, Mario Kart with a Lotus-style engine, made me think. Lotus is about straight line speed and corner-hugging sensation. Mario Kart is slowed down and condensed to allow room for dexterous steering and extracurricular combat. In Bump and Burn, the power-ups and power-downs come at you too fast to meaningfully collect or avoid. By the time you see it in front of you, you're probably going to hit it either way. The oil patches that mess up your steering are particularly irritating for this, reducing your agency further. Learning the tracks might help, but the elongated sameness of NASCAR-like speedways makes that hard to do by accident. In its favor, the cast of characters is quite colorful and varied. 6 out of 10.
Yeah. I agree. They went over the same ground we went over, both for the most part. You know, as I said here, I was watching the video here as you were speaking. You know, you're right about the radar being not that important, especially since it's almost always empty when you're way ahead or way behind.
Right.
They could have easily, I would much rather have just had a map right there, to be honest with you.
Would have been so much better.
One of the fellows was right. By the time you see those power-ups, you're going to hit them. I mean, you're pretty much, that's it. You know, so it is what it is. I did fail to mention, I looked this up on eBay, and there are copies available of the disc and CD version. And it's funny, they're pretty much costed about the same. I mean, you can buy them right now for around $40.
Okay.
I've seen them sell for around $17. One thing I wanted to mention, one of the discs, I didn't catch which one it was, but one of the Discord fellows that rated all three of the versions, he mentioned that he had looked at the AGA version. So I'm wondering if they released, I know they didn't release it. I wonder if there's an AGA disc version that's floating around somewhere.
I bet there is. I bet they managed to crack out a version of some kind.
Yeah, I'd say so. So there you go. It ain't the worst thing I play, but it's not something I'd be rushing back to play. And even with two players, because I played this with a boy, and I was just like, it's okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, why don't we talk a little bit about what's been going on over in our Amigos community, Aaron. We have a new slate of high score challenges that just kicked off. I want to congratulate the winner of last month's high score challenge, which just closed. Outrun, that infamous port, Sundown, has reigned supreme in first place with a score of 37 million points, which is insane for a game like Outrun. Sundown really took this game to task. Paul, aka Hermsky, in second, Mitsuyama in third. Congratulations, fellas. Congratulations to all 8 of you that competed in that competition. And as winner, Sundown gets to choose the next game. He chose Smarty and the Nasty Gluttons. So if you are interested in getting a score in, head on over to the Amigos High Score channel over on our Discord. You've got until the 4th of December when this thing closes up. Have you played Smarty and the Nasty Gluttons, Aaron?
That's one wacky named game, Boat. I'd say I never heard of that one.
Over in Specky High Score Land, things are getting fast and furious over on Bruce Lee, Aaron. I'm seeing some scores that I did not think were possible. 366,000 by Paul, aka Hermsky, currently leading in first place. If you're interested in getting into that Specky High Score Challenge, you know the place for that too over in Discord. We got six fine folks who have submitted scores so far. I'm looking forward to that list increasing as we get closer to November 15th when this thing closes out.
I didn't know you could really run up the score in Bruce Lee, but I don't think I ever really paid much attention to the score.
Yeah, me neither. Game. Me neither. So I'm going to have to jump in there and see what I can do.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
All right. And let's see. I think that is going to do it for the Amigos community updates. Last week, we actually have 2 Patreon song groups of winners to go over. 2 weeks ago, I got a charming poem from the one and only Rob O'Hara. He said, "It made me feel happy. It made me feel nostalgic, but most of all, it made me feel like a natural woman." And you're correct, Rob. It was Natural Woman by Aretha Franklin, or by Carole King, depending on whoever you're listening to. The Slow Norris, also congratulations for getting that one. And of course, last week with our special guest appearance by Jeff Lynn, the song was Telephone Line and congratulations to Mitsuyama and Rob O'Hara once again for getting that.
I had to pull some strings
right
on that boat.
I know. You and Jeff sort of go way back, though. You've been buddies forever.
You got that right.
All right, Aaron. For this week's Patreon song, I've done a little solo guitar number. I believe that you have it queued up. So if you know the answer to this week's Patreon song, please send me an email at john@amigospodcast.com.
Datadog Heavy Systems, Bundy Fraglore, Mark Byland, Olav Hope, Hermsky, Joan A.K. Simulants, Ethan Little, Alien Breeder, Dave Velociraptor, Cowbird Boy, Lane Denson, Luke Hudson, John Cook, Bomb the Base, Roshi, Frodo, NL, Soul Incisor, Tech Mage, Jurgen, Mr. Cola, Daniel Williams, Bernard Lucas, Jerry Dennington, Zorglub, Commodore Kid, Reflection, Simon Ledge, Cap'n Crispy, Kilobytes and Caffeine, Gary Heather Free Lunch, Kate Fox, David Pickford, Cameron Armstrong, Andy Jones, Lobsterminator, 10-Minute Amiga Retrocast, Bernard Quinn, RMC, Tim Drew, Simon Rose, Joseph Harrison, Kyle Eder, Rob O'Hara, Matthew Larimore, Andy Craig, Shonzo Barkbit, Roland Burke, Andrew Monks, Joe the Zombie, Leith Kellan, Alan Keba, Checo Tay, Level Lord, John Marshall, Matthew Perrone, Ricky DeRosha, Creepy Dead Boy, Figgy CTZ, The Slow Norris, Stefan Sorgard, Mortensen, Edvin Helen Blindo 75, Christopher Hassel, Ravi Abbott, Chris Foles, Dreamcatcher, Lauren Giroux, Graham Vebke, Adam Battersby, O'Brien's Retro and Vintage, Gary Hucker, Paul Harrington, Duncan Styles, Tapes from the Crypt, Josh Nan, Adam Bradley, Jonas Rulo, THT, Eric Nelson, Kim Tommy, Humbert Stan, Daniel Bingston, Brutal Barracuda, Darren Coles, Jason Warns, Pixels at Dawn, and Kjolbjorn Barman.
All right. And of course, Aaron, we couldn't forget about our fabulous, fabulous Twitch subscribers. We want to thank all of them as well for keeping this show on the air. Gary Heather, Wing Chun Wolf, Buck Owens, Edvin Helland, Johnny Renegade, Christian Russell, Rushi MSX, Traegard 82, Frodo NL, Amiga Live, Great Owl G, Retro Jerry, Brock 101, David Zinaz, Memories of a Spectrum Gamer, Lamatza, Roscoe 500, Barkbit, Z9K9, Hamo 1, Pints and Amiga, Zorglub 45, Eeyore 4077, Mitsuyama, Still Adolescing, RMC Retro, 48K RAM, Tom Servo 1970, and Jigglebox. Thank you guys so much for subscribing on Twitch. Remember, if you do sub on Twitch, you get all the same benefits as far as getting access to our Discord channel and everything. So make sure you hop on board and get involved with the community.
Yeah.
Now, man. Aaron, speaking of the community, we had a couple recent releases from our fellow buddies over at Amigos Retro Gaming, Pixel Gaiden and Rob O'Hare. You want to give us the rundown there?
I sure do. You know, of course, they're not just our buddies on the show. We're actually fans. I love both these shows. I like all Rob's shows, and Pixel Gaiden, I'm a big fan. If you are out of the loop, the boys over at Pixel Gaiden released their Halloween episode just about a week ago today. So give that a check out. It's always a good time with those fellas. And then our good buddy, Rob Fleck O'Hara, we mentioned earlier that he had released a Sprite Castle Plays of Pitfall. He's also released the Sprite Castle of Pitfall. It just came out. Definitely worth your listen. And I think I mentioned this last week, but I mentioned it again. Rob also does a show called You Don't Know Flack and had a tremendous episode last time out on his time printing and publishing a music newspaper, which was this was great. I enjoyed this to no end, Boat. It was an interesting look into the low end rock scene medium sized town and all the things that go into that. So
That's awesome. I can't wait to listen to that.
Oh, it was one of my favorites. Rob can go. All these guys can go, and we're very appreciative to have these guys as part of our community. So check them out, please.
Yeah. And of course, we would be remiss to not recognize all the fine folks who have joined us live in chat this evening for our evening of revelry. First of all, we want to thank our moderators, Duncan Styles and Pixels at Dawn Gaming. Thank you guys so much for keeping the banhammer at the ready, as always. And of course, all the other fine folks that have joined us, Atten, Barkbit, Bike Me, Buck Owens, Cobrian, Commander Root, Edvin Helen, just in from the bonfire, Figgy78, Frodo NL, Gary Heather, Jigglebox, Hermsky, Idalara, Juan Kanav, Kassernin, L. Curtis B., Lobsterminator, Mitsuyama, Paranoid CB, Paranoic CB, Paul Kitching, Picard 2010, Princess League, R. Typer, Rob O'Hara, Stulu 89, to Toms, VNK, Vigoro Pros, Wishbone, and Z9K9. Thank you guys so much for joining us.
One more shout out, Boat. One more big shout out. And this big shout out goes to you, my friend, John Boat of Karchaller. Give it up for this man. This guy's sick. He's in there. He's doing a guitar number. He's punching through horrible internet, and he's getting the job done. He's getting that old school, the only way that John Boat of Karchaller can. He's doing all the crap behind the scenes. So you're doing a great job, Boatster, and I appreciate you, my friend. I'm glad you're keeping the ball rolling. Very few men would go through what you're going through and still not miss a show. So nice work,
well,
man.
Thank you. And I do appreciate every single one of you guys that have reached out to me, whether it's been through, you know, private message on the Discord or giving me a call on the phone or just saying hello and checking up and seeing how I'm doing. I'm going to get through this. I'm hopeful that this time next week, I'll really have been able to kick this thing to the curb and kiss COVID goodbye.
That's right. Kiss it off, Boat. Get that thing out of there.
All right, guys. So next week, we're going to have a little change of pace. It's Puzzle Week on the Amigos, and we're going to be taking a look at Bill's Tomato Game, Aaron.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now we got a little taste of this on one of my streams.
Yeah. This one, I remember having a lot of fun watching you play this, so I'm looking forward to it. This was picked by Frodo NL, this is going to be a fun one. We want to thank all of the AGSC members, as always, for choosing these games for us. We really appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to next week, Bill's Tomato Game. So thanks, as always, everybody, for watching. We'll see you next week. Until then, adios.